Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
This is To The Point, a Rhino experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's the host, your boy, Chris Yano, along with my co-host, Mr. Tall Paul Redmond. My friend, how you doing?
Man, any better and I would be our guest Eddie MC. There's such a different energy in the studio when it's someone's second time. You know, we know each other, we know what to expect, we know it's going to be fire. So, man, I'm excited, glad to be here.
Eddie MC. Do you like that, Ed?
Wooka wooka.
Yep. Eddie Max.
I'm so street, I'm concrete. This is great.
That's good. Eddie McFarland, welcome back to the show, my friend.
My pleasure. It's great to be here. I appreciate it. You guys are doing incredible things with this podcast, and so it's just great to be back. And
so Eddie was on thanks, buddy. Eddie was on a previous episode at the end of last year, episode 49, and that was battle tested training for home services success.
So good.
Back on, I think December 21st when that episode aired. It was badass. It was well received by our listeners. So thank you, my friend. You're back a second time. That tells you all you need to know.
It was great. I wrapped it and put it under the tree for my kids as a Christmas present. It was a great day.
I'm sure they really loved it. They're like, I'm sure they really loved it.
Thanks, Dad. And you've kind of become a celebrity since then. You've got the tool shed. You're getting yourself out there a little bit. You've got a little following. We're going to talk about that today.
Yeah, we sure are.
Let's roll with that. But little celebrity. It's a joke.
Oh, go ahead.
No, wasn't sure if that was a height joker.
So, oh, good grief.
Well, I've got a question. I know I'm yes. Kind of breaking form here, because this has been on my mind since the last time we had you on. Of all of our guests in the history of almost whatever, 75.
Oh, what's he going to say? No, I'm interested.
You had probably the greatest depth of quotes and knowledge and resources you were pulling from, right? And you talked a lot about having a learning culture and all that in your company.
Yeah.
Like, where do you learn all this stuff? How do you hold on to those quotes and how do you draw from all that knowledge?
A misspent childhood. I have no idea. I wasn't a great student in school, like many of us in the trades. And somewhere along the line, there's I've just gravitated to what I refer to as these universal truths that just I find sticky, easy to understand. The lure of the philosophies, it just makes sense to me. And so when it makes sense, I think it recalls a little easier. And the other thing is, you know, we talk about this in the learning cultures, you know, when you hear something, you'll recall it 10% of the time. If you use it, 40% of the time, and there's a time variance. And all the brain science says that, you know, when we learn something, it goes to one side of a brain. When we recall it, it's like we go to a different filing cabinet in our brain. And so that's why repetition and recall is, you know, typically a little better for studying and stuff. Yeah.
I remember him dropping all of those bombs and Paul geeking out over all of it.
You thought it was smart.
And listen, right.
There's someone over here with a giant cue card with dead people quotes on it.
That works out great.
Not.
Well, listen, if you're listening for the first time and you didn't hear Eddie's episode, so we don't want to assume everybody knows who Eddie Mack is. He's not just a DJ from Middle Pennsylvania. he's on the ones and twos. Also the VP of Learning and Development for Haller Enterprises, as well as co-founder of our partner, Schedule Engine, and Jack of All Trades. I said yes. Jack of All Trades, Paul.
I get it.
From Lititz. Lititz. Actually,
well said.
Hails from, but originally from, as I see it behind you, can't see on unless you're watching it, behind him, from Alua.
That's pretty good, man. Most people go Hawaiian, and that's like, that was really Alua. Good. Alua, yeah.
Alua, son of a. I was close.
You're pretty close.
From Scotland. Oh, by the way, you want to hear a good Scottish joke?
I would love to hear a good Scottish joke.
Okay. What do you call a Scotsman in the knockout stages of the World Cup?
I have no idea. What do you call a Scotsman in the knockout stage of the World
Cup? I'm pretty sure an Irishman wrote this joke. A referee.
Oh! I thought you were going to say lonely, but that's pretty good. Yeah.
Because he ain't playing.
Yeah, that's, you know, the joke that we always heard growing up is I was 14 before I realized the full name of the team wasn't Scotland nil. So, you know.
That's pretty... Pretty good follow-up joke there.
Solid. Hey, yeah. my daughter is a goalkeeper, and her keeper coach is played on the Scotland World Cup team. He's a goalkeeper. And
he got a lot of practice, judging by the Scottish defense.
So what I learned is that it doesn't take that much, and they're not that great.
Yes.
But I love listening to him coach her because he forgets – well, I shouldn't say he forgets. He just doesn't care that they're children. She's 14, but he lets her have it like she's an adult. And I love it. It's actually part of what's funny right. about him because he just busts her chops and she needs it too.
Probably is why she's doing so well too, at least a part of
it. She's
I'm
crushing
sure.
it, man. She's crushing it. Hey, you know what else? We didn't bring this up last time, and I don't know how it didn't come up because I love talking about Scotland. But we talked a lot about William Wallace because I think William Wallace is a badass. But we never brought up the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, that's we're all sworn to secrecy on that.
Yeah,
I don't know how much I can divulge. That.
Do you know?
Yeah,
well, do you know what the Loch Ness Monster likes to eat?
I bet Chris does.
No. What does the Loch Ness Monster like to eat?
Fish and ships.
That's pretty good. That's dad joke that's quality dad right there.
Kyle just got it. Took you a second. Well, yeah, it's because the microphone's so good. And is so close. Okay, I'm so sorry, listeners, to put you through that. It's actually all Eddie's fault. He put me up to it.
It's true.
It's none of it was mine. Paul, you want to go ahead and kick us off, bro? Oh, actually, you know what? No.
No,
I forgot. I almost forgot.
Yes, you did.
Eddie, we switched up the style a little bit since you were on last to ask some icebreaker questions. I know your game, so I'm not going to ask you. First things first, you know, we'll give our listeners a little idea of who Eddie is besides a Scotsman with a brilliant beard. If you could have dinner with anyone, live or dead, who would it be?
Boy, I don't want to be George Washington.
No kidding. Oh, George Washington. Solid. Cool.
Yeah.
At his house.
His house.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I hear was amazing.
Yeah, I actually got a chance to visit and see his private library and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Wow.
Very cool.
Cool. That's the first time we got that answer. I like asking that question. Okay. If you could be a superhero, which one would you be? And Tall Paul is not an answer.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
That's rubbish.
I would have to say, I think something like Spider-Man.
I can dig it. I can dig Spider-Man.
Yeah, and don't take himself too seriously.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
You know?
Yep. Okay.
Doesn't always get it right.
I'm down.
Tries hard.
He doesn't always get it right. Tries hard. That's pretty good. Okay. Next. So Paul kind of mentioned a minute ago that you were, you know, that you guys have the tool shed, which we'll talk about, you and Jerry.
Yeah.
We'll talk about later who's the bigger tool.
Wow.
Oh, I think, come on. I wish I could see your reaction from it. anyhow, moving on. You walk out. Okay, so now it's you versus Jerry. Okay.
Yep.
You guys are walking out.
Yep.
Curtain opens. Eddie's ready to roll. He's ready to go to battle. He's got an entrance song. Okay. What would your entrance song be? Now, hang on. I'm going to give you a chance to think about it. When I start thinking of Eddie McFarlane, I'm like, what do I think his entrance song would be? So I like to take a crack at it if you would
yes.
let me. Is that
fair? Yeah, please.
Okay, so Eddie walks out. The curtain opens up. He's got his gloves on. He's ready to kick some Jerry Rollins' ass. And the crowd goes crazy, and his music is... Yeah, is that appropriate?
That's not bad. That gets the feet tapping, you know what I mean?
It does.
That would be...
Let me just tell you, by the way, we are recording this episode on the 19th of May, and yesterday was opening day at the Indianapolis 500, which is near and dear to my heart. And guess what? The Bagpipers play at the Indianapolis 500, and they play that song all the time. So every time I hear it, it makes me think of the Indianapolis 500.
It's a good one. They say there's nothing better in the world than bagpipes played well. There's nothing worse in the world than bagpipes played badly. It's like you've ever seen that drunk busker in Edinburgh like killing a cat? It's terrible. But man, when you just hear it and it hits you, I defy you not to feel something. It's pretty cool.
I have requested it to be played at my funeral. And that's going to be when I'm 97 years old. I think so. Anyway, okay, getting back to it. So you walk out, you're ready to kick Jerry's ass. Your entrance song plays. What is Eddie's entrance song?
I had one. Now I'm all thinking about bagpipes. You know what? There's a great crowd song. They sing it at some of the games back home, and it's called Sunshine on Leith by the Proclaimers, and it's a good crowd song. I don't know. First off, lover, not a fighter. I'm pretty sure Jerry could kick my ass. So we'd probably sit down, have a bit of a sing song, and break bread. But that's probably where I'd go. There's if you go on YouTube, you'll see there's a stadium with 80,000 people singing this song. It's pretty cool.
I love it. Okay. Well, I'm about to look it up and give it a go. Okay, let's get into the good stuff because as I've learned, the name of the podcast is called To The Point, and it seems to be the last thing I do is get to the point. So that's actually the point, right? No?
Nice.
Okay. Paul, go ahead and kick us off, bro. Let's get this thing going.
Yeah. I mean, we're starting this one a little differently because we heard your personal story on the last podcast, but I want you to share with the listeners, what's the significance of a turtle on a fence post? And this is not a Cristiano question.
Yeah, so it's a great question. Comes to us courtesy of a good friend of mine, Jerry Rollins, an incredible trainer, incredible human. And he's like, oh, we got to do a turtle on the fence post. And he says this like everybody knows, like turtle on fence post, turtle. I'm like, and he finally, yesterday went shopping for a turtle because we needed one as a prop. He's like the carrot top of trainers. He's got props for everything. It's fantastic. But really, what Jerry would tell you is that if you're driving and you come to a stop sign and you look around and you happen to see a fence post and there's a turtle on it, you can be certain of one thing. That turtle did not get there on its own. And it's the call out. He talks about this story. I think it was Alex Hurley, a writer who's tremendously successful. And the quick version is
Roots, right?
Yeah, right. And won all kinds of Pulitzers and then TV shows and all kinds of stuff. And if you go to his office, you would see a poster and it's a turtle on a fence post. And it's to remind him that he didn't get there on his own. And, it's like, I think it was the Sir Isaac Newton quote that I like that says, you know, if I've seen further, it's because I've stood on the shoulder of giants. And to me, that's what the trades do, right? Like everybody that's listening to this, that's in home services, can think of that one person that gave them a hand up, a leg up, and just shared. And so we talk about that. Who put you up on your fence post? And conversely, you know, what are you doing to lift others up? And so that's turtle on a fence post. It should be a common phrase, but that's what that means.
Thanks, Paul. That was great.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And it made me think of like really the unintended consequence of this podcast has been we're learning so much about the people who have helped the people become the people they are today. And it comes in, you know, through almost every story we have. And I see more and more of that now more than ever, particularly over the last year, as I see contractors all across the country kind of uniting to help one another in different markets. And so that kind of brings me into our next question, which is around what are you doing with the tool shed? Why are you doing it? What is it? Tell us all about it.
Yeah. So I, as I was saying earlier, I'm incredibly fortunate, byproduct of a lot of people pouring themselves into my life. And I'm at the position now where, underwritten by Schedule Engine as a give back to the trades, and we picked up some sponsorship along the way from Emerson, who are great partners. But this was a period that we set aside. We understand it's been kind of an odd year for some, and just an okay past year for others. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to sort of have, we're getting ready to have a summer. Like for many of us, that's when we make our bones. Projects just seem to go regardless of the trade in the summer. And so what we want to do is we want to get everybody back in not just shape, but tip top championship level. So we had this idea of spring training. What would spring training look like if it was done by a couple of old codger tradespeople that used to know a thing or two, right? And so so we created the tool shed, and the tool shed is just a place. Like if you've ever done it, if you've ever been a tradesman, you know that the right tool for the job is just a must. We've all had a project where we struggled. We go, you do the big box store run, come back, and the right tool, you just get right to it. And so what we wanted to do was put a series of lessons that have been shared with us together in a way that could be potentially engaging, build a positive, intentional space online that was digestible, relatable, honest, and positive, and share the best, and get everybody ready. It's free, no excuse. Get your team ready to make an absolute killing in the summer. So that's what the tool shed was.
It's funny. Like I've watched it, and I like that you guys use your humor and you have fun in it with it. And even though I said jokingly, who's the bigger tool? I say that because I thought it was funny, but it
was funny.
We're smiling. Anyway. It's just a podcast.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. But it is funny. Like I think your next, I think you're going to be at episode 28 already. I think it's what it is. Yeah. That's coming up.
Yep.
But it's fun. I mean, I've enjoyed it. I've probably watched, I think, four of the episodes of the 28, but, well, I like it, man. I like it. I dig it.
Well, here's the thing. We're just people. We don't want to pretend that we've like got everything figured out. We don't want to pretend that we're these presenters. We've got day jobs. This is sort of our love letter back to the trades, that like all those people that helped us, knocked us into shape. How cool is it you get the chance to just pass it on? We're all just caretakers of truth, right? And we just pass it on. And so to do that, the last thing I want to do is be at a conference somewhere and someone come up to me and be like, well, that's not it.
Yeah, that guy was an asshole.
No, he was like that. You know, and life's about being authentic. And I think, you know, that's that. One of the good things about the trade. And so we're just being ourselves, hopefully a little polished. We try and have fun. Part of it stems from Jerry and I have both been fortunate to share at different companies, different conferences, and there's a lot of interest in how do you set up successful training. And we've had this train the trainer approach, and eventually we just said, you know, what if we just did it? What if we just did it for them? And we're seeing a lot of service managers, they take the episode, whether it's role playing about how to position maintenance or, you know, turnover lead, whatever it is, and use that as the kernel for their service meeting that week. And if that's how they use it, that's awesome. You know, the rising tide lifts all boats. And so we're all about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And listeners, if you haven't followed them on Facebook, go to Toolshed and follow them on Facebook. I know I've sent some people over there too, but go ahead and get that done.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And I think it points to something that's going on in our industry that I find fascinating and will be around for a while. And that's, we kind of talked about the information cycle. So there used to be like, oh, you would get information from your sales rep who worked for a distributor who bought from a manufacturer. And then a couple times a year, you'd go to this event. And then it got a little bit tighter as you started joining best practice groups and you started having lead groups. And there's a high cost of entry to those things. And then again, you have annual meetings. Well, it seems like there's been this acceleration of communities that are forming that are really disrupting the way that contractors get information, the way they make decisions.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about like communities and what you see the future in that space?
Yeah, and it's a great subject, and I'm sure you guys are like me. You sort of stand back and you're fairly connected. You can see the different groups, and I like to think that the trades are like, we're a diaspora. There's like, you know, 120,000 HVAC contractors, and we're all running the same job, but we all run it slightly different. And so there's this great need to know, am I doing this right? And so we have this really interesting situation where we're both extremely fractioned by what we do, and yet quite cloistered in our community. And, you know, I always say, like, if you do something well, it's great because the word's going to go, like, you know, this podcast has been spread because it's good and it's valuable and people will spread it. But every coin has two sides. And if you, you know, if you kind of pee in the pool, like, people are going to know, right? Like, so it's a good news, bad news situation. And I think information and relevant truths are like, it's like water. It finds its own level and it finds its way out eventually. And so what we see is this aggregation of communities where people are sharing information. They're vetting, they're vetting each other. They're vetting services. Hey, what do you know about these people? What do you know about this cat? And that's, it's very primitive. It's very tribal. Yuval Harari, he has this great book and he talks about how, like, go back
Sapiens?
To the dawn of time. Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good book.
Such a very good book. But he talks about, like, ever since we were able to use language to self-identify, it's allowed us to build these tribes beyond these sort of mammalian 55, 65 sort of like mental constructs that tribes were limited to before. And so as soon as we have the ability to say, hey, I believe that there's an imaginary line here and that's one country and this is ours, all of a sudden we're able to say, well, I'm on this side, and the other people say, I'm on that side. And we use these constructs all the time. What is money except just something we all agree has value? We're seeing that right now with to the moon and all that stuff with crypto, right? We're seeing coalescence of ideas, and the industry isn't insulated from that. So I think what you're seeing is these groups self-identifying as saying, I believe in excellence, or, hey, I just want to share memes, or I'm looking to grow my business and I want to be around people that have done it and can shine the light on it so that I don't stub my toe too much. Or, I just want to know how to train my people better. And so what I believe is just a return to what we really know, which is, in the absence of knowing what to do, we look for people that are like us and we do what they do, which is like Robert Cialdini talks about that in Influence. You know, it's just who we are.
Oh, it's so good. I read Cialdini's book too. I forgot the name of it. It's Interpersonal Influence.
Influence. The science of persuasion and influence.
Yep.
And then he has this other book called Persuasion, which I don't think is good.
I'm hanging on
7-minute YouTube is better.
I'm hanging on 2 for 2 for book references, and I think that's all I got.
That's pretty good.
I want to come back to kind of the concept around self-improvement and learning, kind of culture within the company. So if I'm listening to this podcast right now and I have a successful company, I'm inspired by something. How do I implement, how do I create a culture of everybody wanting to get a little bit better and rowing in the right direction?
Oh boy, we could park here for a couple hours, right? The simple answer is, again, we go back to, think of your children. They don't listen to what you say. They look at what you do. So first things first, integrity. We model the behavior we hope to see in others. And that speaks louder than anything. And if you're a contractor that's all about improvement, what are you doing? And what are you talking about? And, you know, if culture is defined as nothing more than what we behaviors that we reward and punish, what are we rewarding, right? And what are we holding people accountable for? So I think there's a behavioral aspect of it, but then there's just the other aspect of, and I think this we're seeing more than ever is understanding that, you know, you can't push a rope, right? You can't force things. So just like we do, we don't spend all day and all of our marketing dollars convincing customers, to come and read a yellow pages so that we can get their business, right? You fish where the fish are, and because that's what's important, you want them. And so we change our behavior for our external customers and we go where they are and we use the tools they use. So for training our internal customers, after you're modeling that behavior and you're rewarding the good stuff that you want repeated, then it's about understanding how do people want to learn today and how do they consume information? What is their appetite and what's their, the mind can only endure with a can absorb what the butt can endure, right? Are you sitting them in a chair for 4 hours and having like somebody come in and read a PowerPoint? I've been to that training, And newsflash, I've got a cooler accent. I can read that the PowerPoint myself. Like, don't do that to me. And by the way, we're making the installers sit through 3 hours of sales guy stuff, service stuff, and vice versa. And so, like, we got to make sure that we're structuring it correctly. So modeling it, and then having a no BS conversation with your team about how they like to learn, and then just setting up, and then blow up raucous, man. Try a bunch of everything. Right now, there's so many resources. Try it. Fail fast.
Thank you. You said something that you said on the last podcast, and I've never forgotten it. And I want you to come back to it, because you're the only person that I've ever heard define your culture as the things you reward and the things you punish. So talk to me a little bit more about that. Give me some examples, some experience that's formed that opinion, because I've never heard it anywhere else. And maybe you learned
it. Yeah. Yeah, I did. It's a gentleman. It's one of the ex Google culture people, and it's the simplest, and it resonates with all of the anthropological understanding we have, right? Like, there's tons been written on it, and studies. I've read the Harvard white papers and all of that. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we say culture is. We can look at what culture is. Our kids understand like your home has a culture, and it's not from the posters on the wall. It's from what you punish and reward. And that's how culture is experienced. It doesn't matter what you say, it matters what you do. And so, in fact, it's worse if you say the opposite, because there's this cognitive dissonance, and it actually does more harm than good. And that's where we talk about toxic culture.
For sure,
so for me, it's simply, I think it starts with your center of values. So it could be something as simple as picking up the phone and saying, "Hey, Barry, I saw you had a service call. The GPS let me know you were at 2 o'clock last night. Man, I just want you to know, taking care of our customers, like people like you, that's how we're gonna take over the world. And I want you to know I value it more than anything you'll ever know. If I can ever do anything for you, just let me know." It's when somebody has a microaggression in one of these, when there's clearly some sort of alpha male bully that's dominating the training room, and nobody is speaking up because this guy is just being an a-hole, and you don't address it. That's your culture. So we've seen it, and your values have to cost you something, or they're not real.
I've been kicked around by a couple of guys like that in my former life.
Yeah, it's no good, man. Who like training? Tool shed, whatever you want to call it. Like, I just think of life as a giant cocktail party. Like, absent the money, like, if I came up and talked to you at a cocktail party, would I be like, "Hey, okay, come and gotta go," or would I hang out and engage with you and exchange ideas with you? Like, if you don't pass the cocktail party test, you got some reflecting to do.
Interesting. So talk to me more about like the logistics of training. Is it what has worked best? Is it, a weekly, a daily? I mean, what's it look like with the technicians?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things. There's what's practical. There's what's best. I think now more than ever, if you'd asked me this question a year ago, in fact, I was answered, and I was an eyeball to eyeball, get them in the room, press the flesh, make them look at you and promise all kinds of things. Because that's how we did that. That's what we knew. And while we were comfortable with other digital tools, we weren't sure our audience was, and we always have to keep pace with our audience. Well, over the last, year and a half, if there's a bright side to anything, it's that everybody knows how to use them, right? Everybody knows how to, right. When your aunt is on the family quiz night, like Zoom may have jumped to the shark at that point. Right. So we can all agree that the tools and stuff we have is different. So I think that's the sort of mechanism for it. And then because that takes down barriers such as cost and travel and time and all these other things. So it opens up lots of other options. But what's interesting, I think, is the way that the job of a technician has evolved. It's just different. Like for me, I grew up in the trades working for a company, and we came in every morning, but that was just to turn in paperwork. We had one big meeting a week, and that was the housekeeping rah-rah session, and it was good. But I think as I've talked to owners and operators across the country, the challenge they're feeling and the frustration that they're perhaps taken out on their teams is the lack of compliance, or the you know, they're not doing this process right. Well, the reality is the job of the technician has changed, and what used to be go fix it and bill from office and, you know, clean out your truck once a week. Now it's the parts they're dealing with are incredibly esoteric. So all of a sudden things like inventory and inventory management and truck stock is super mission critical, right? Cause we're not throwing in universal motors. We're looking for, you know, brand specific tools. And the fact that they need to know about financing, they need to know about soft skills, they need to know about, you know, the new software that's been updated so they can do their job, and the changes to the on-call schedule. So the only consistent thing I've seen improve performance relative to training is consistent and timely training and repetition. You know, there's a reason, you know, all the parables are repeated 3 times in the Bible. Teachers know repetition, repetition, repetition. And so, you know, it's not that the people are broken. It's just the job's changed and there's just a lot to remember. When I need to do 400 things on every call, chances of me missing 50 of them are pretty high.
Right.
Now you
I'm
mentioned,
not a bad person, right?
Well, you mentioned the soft skills. I think you quoted Jerry, or I've heard Jerry say, it's not the technical stuff, but the other stuff that really grinds our gears. What does he mean by that? And then how do you keep the attention of, you know, service technicians? It's easy to talk about the soft skills stuff with like me or Chris, but like service technicians, how do you get and keep their attention around soft skills?
Yeah. So the stuff that grinds gears, it, you know, a lot of people go into the job because they just want to fix things. They're good with their hands. And now we're asking them to be relational experts and, you know, understand things like proximetrics and sitting down and like all kinds of crazy stuff that's nothing to do with getting an air conditioner running. So I think that's the stuff that if you ask them what they'd rather do, spend 6 hours tracking down a low voltage short or ask someone their credit history, you know, for a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'll go hunt the short. And so that's the stuff Jerry says, you know, we're not going to tell you how to fix the stuff. We're going to tell you how to talk about the stuff you're fixing. He talks about how quite often don't run past the customer to make love to the air conditioner. You know, we work, our job is to fix the air conditioner, but it's on behalf of all the people in the house, because that's who we expect. Like, as soon as they're gone, no one cares about the air conditioning. So I think it's understanding that soft skills are important, and that all things being even, that's the hard part for a lot of technicians. So how we make it engaging is we understand our role and we understand the technician's role. So our role isn't to train and then send them out. There's this old saying that says, if the student hasn't learned, the teacher hasn't taught. Yep. And I think that's the biggest disconnect that I see with people that are trying training, especially around soft skills. It's like, well, I told them, quit sending me these crap, you know, these kids these days. You know, what we need to understand is the role of the technician, the things specifically that they're struggling with. And there's this whole diagnostic process that you go through. I think we talked about it in the last episode. People can check it out. But once you understand the issue, then how do they want to learn? Do they want to learn small groups? Do they want to just ride along and watch? And anymore, if you really want to grow beyond organic growth rates, you're going to have to be adaptive to people's learning skills, especially where we're outstripping our capacity for skilled people. And if we start making our own, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Can hold different kettle of fish. I've never heard that. And I learned 2 words during that segment.
Oh, handy for Scrabble.
So talk about, I'm sorry, Chris, did you want to jump in?
No, it's fine. Actually, it passed because you start joking.
Sorry. So talk about, I want to talk about consumer expectations and how that's had an impact on technicians and how technology can kind of cover that gap and how the soft skills cover that gap. Like, where do those two things intersect? And what do you see? This is kind of a two-parter. Like, where does technology come into play with the service technicians?
Yeah, I think really, really important things. You know, I'm convinced the people that are going to win this game, defined as the usual sort of barometers of success, are the ones that continue ruthlessly to put their customers at the center of everything they do.
Yeah.
Ruthlessly put their customers at the center of everything they do, period. And it's the exact same for their external customers. So like, obviously that's where Schedule Engine was born. Schedule Engine's sole purpose is to enhance the consumer experience for contractors that already have viable business and software and all that other stuff that need that customer focus lift. It's where training comes in, and understanding that everything that we've just discussed about understanding roles, it's about understanding that they're not there to learn. You're there to teach. They're your, like, you wouldn't, you know, get very far if you were selling air conditioners and you just couldn't get anybody to sort of buy into the idea. So there's that. That's the importance of soft skills. And why that's important is because increasingly the technology that we use both to sell and to actually experience the services in the trade is changing. And, you know, I'm often reminded of all the great ideas, great inventions, better mousetraps that are sitting collecting dust in people's basement. You can have an incredible product, whether it's an air conditioner or whatever, but if no one knows how to talk about it in a way that anybody gives a crap, then congratulations, you've got an expensive paperweight, right? And bars are filled with people crying at the end of it, saying, I invented a car that drove on electric 20 years ago. I mean, you guys have probably talked to enough people that are like, oh, I had that idea 20 years ago. Well,
yeah.
Could you build a team? Can you share a vision? Can you educate to overcome? And can you share a story that is compelling enough for people to part with their money? It's the old Zig Ziglar. Yeah, it's not too expensive. You just didn't give me enough reasons to care. And so I think with technology, whether it's the technology like a ServiceTitan or a FieldEdge that they use, we need to get really good at continuing to reduce the friction of that. And I think these companies have done a great example of that relative to their predecessors. But then it's also the technology that we live with and how we live in our homes and how we experience our home. We need to be able to talk about that. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just a commodity race. And who wants to be involved in that?
But Eddie, we've always done it this way.
Yes. And we'll go to the museum and we can look at all those people as well. You know, I'm not saying that the tsunami is coming tomorrow, but, you know, I think it was John Wooden that says the only consistent thing in life is change, right? So,
yeah,
you know, yeah, it's you know, there's we just talked about this with some of our team, and we do this little leadership academy, and it's this concept of what got you here won't get you there, and we're victims of our own success because of our success bias, or, you know, just one of those fallacies that we keep in our. It's like, well, I just need to get to, you know, Jimmy Fallon because everybody famous was on Jimmy Fallon. Like, well, no, that's not how it works, right? That's just a conflation of fact. And so I think we need to really understand that we need to equip our teams to get better at communicating about all the incredible things technology does. Otherwise, we don't care.
Yep. When you talk about the tsunami,
yeah,
what do you see? What do you see that being described? That what's behind that wall? That's a big one.
No, yeah. And listen, I'm reading the tea leaves, and for $5, I can get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks too. So, like, put the appropriate amount of weight. There's probably smarter people than me, but what I see is an unyielding evolution of consumer expectation, and we've talked about this, but
absolutely.
I think it's not going away, and it comes and stops and starts, and we confuse that with failure, but it's not. It's innovation, and it's just not going away. And what I see is two paths. There's two clear paths to me. One is we as an industry in these group hold ourselves accountable to increasing customer joy and satisfaction at how they can experience our products and trades and services. Mm-hmm. And we hold our stakeholders, whether it's distributors and manufacturers, and we force them to evolve with us. And we need to do that for a lot of reasons. The skilled labor gap, if that doesn't end with an end run of the way equipment manufacture being more modular, plug and play, then that's a giant missed opportunity. If the other path that I see that isn't from the inside is from the outside, because cash goes where the customers go.
Yep.
And disruption that, you know, in most cases happens from the outside, not always, you know, there's some brave souls that are willing to evolve the concept and have the difficult conversation and be willing to have a few bloody noses and be ridiculed. If you ever want to laugh, go look, I think it was
Paul's Wardrobe.
There's an old, what's that?
I said Paul's Wardrobe.
I'm a glass house. I can't throw stones. But like, if you ever want to laugh, go look at the way the high jump used to be done in the Olympics. You'll see we used to run of that face forward, and one lone soul was like, no, man, I think there's a better way. And there's this great, I think Visa even did a commercial about it, where he goes running. Dick Fosbury. It's called the Fosbury Flop. That's it. And he jumps over backwards and he sets this record. Now, we all recognize the Fosbury Flop, and it's a kind of a neat story. But what I think about all of, like, it's one thing to be doing that in a stadium with 120,000 people and winning. I think about all the times he showed up to practice, all the ridicule he got, all the naysayers. And that's a lonely, lonely journey, but he did it and he changed the sport. Where are those pioneers?
Right.
Fosbury Flop.
Yeah.
So good. You know, I was on the, I want to talk, you mentioned something about being able to communicate the way that the products and services that you perform and sell can make a consumer feel. I'm going to back up a little bit and talk about just a macro problem that I see, and I'm curious what your perspective is. I still find it stunning that most of my neighbors and most of yours and Chris, most of yours don't know much about two-stage cooling. They don't know much about variable speed. They don't know much about, variable capacity heating and all these sort of things. Like, it's a far minority. And I had a call with a international manufacturer today who's putting a lot of money in trying to tell this story about this product that really does make your home more comfortable and is smarter and quieter and all these sort of things. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, man, you can pour as many millions in as you want. Like, the story has to be told differently. And I don't know if it's commercials, and I don't know if it's billboards, and I don't know if it's co-op programs. Someone's got to disrupt that space. Someone's got to make it so that human beings recognize that a central component to their health and wellness and happiness and comfort and ability to lay in bed with their spouse at night has to do with air conditioning, because I'm tired of the data that says people just don't think about it until they have to. And when they have to, they rush really quick to Google and then they call someone out and it's a terrible experience. So I say all that to say, one, who can disrupt that? And two, how do we get consumers to create, pull that demand from the contractors? I don't know. What are your thoughts, sir?
Nobody ever buys a drill because they want a drill. They buy a drill because they want a quarter inch hole. Right. And I would suggest that we stop talking about that and say, hey, how would your life to be better? I'm remembered the great tech daddy himself, Charlie Greer. He talks about, like, you want to talk about how, you know, you're going to go in and he calls them word pictures. You go into your bedroom and it's icebox cold, which is how your spouse likes to sleep. And you lay there and you wake up, and for the first time in 15 years, there's a feeling. It's refreshing. You wake up refreshed. You've got more energy. You go to work. You're happier. You're more productive. You're more productive. Your boss gives you a promotion. You get more money. All of a sudden, you know, you're feeling better. You're driving a nicer car, all because you went with this system. Oh, by the way, it has a two-stage system, right? Like, it's now, that's obviously some hyperbole in there, but that's the point, right? It's the net effect. And if we can focus on how people experience their air conditioner, we'll do much better at selling. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, when we can focus on why someone should care, then that's when we get people's attention. We're constantly competing for attention. And I think what Rodney Coop says, you know, it's always about money until you make about something else.
I actually had an opportunity to chime in with a quote, but then Eddie already took it on by saying the why. Damn it.
Yeah, it's the cynic stuff, right?
Yep, that's it. But yeah, because you're basically talking about what the, you know, what the experience is of having it, which is a lot backwards for a lot of people on the sales approach versus that. Yep. I love the whole starts with why thing because it makes a lot of sense to me. You're talking about the end result, experience, feeling, all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to my other passion for the trades, is our self-esteem issue that we all have. We're crippled with ourselves. we perhaps don't believe that we deserve that kind of recognition because, after all, we're just a bunch of blue collar guys. Well, you know, Apple, when it reinvented the way we live, how many people actually had computers, right? But it decided to think differently. GE became an incredible center of management and philosophy. They only made motors. They just decided that that's what they were going to get really good at. And so when a manufacturer or a forward-thinking contractor figures that out, I think you'll see the dominoes fall very quickly.
So let's talk about that, Chris. I know I keep interrupting you, man. I'm so sorry. You know, this is my jam.
No. You're listening. You're on one. Just keep going. I'm in support. So supporting cast.
I even interrupted you after I was apologizing for interrupting you. Okay. We all talk about Elon Musk, who made a reference to HVAC, and we all just kind of like, oh yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what Tesla does with this thing. What kind of opportunity exists for someone like Elon Musk to come in and disrupt an entire industry? Do you see anything down the pipeline with that?
Oh, all of it. I think it's when I was joining ACA or maybe the NATE board, you write a letter. And I actually said that, you know, for me, I think we're incredibly lucky that Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk woke up one day caring about rockets instead of their heating system. We saw what somebody did when they just cared about their thermostat.
Yeah.
An industry that had been stagnating for what? How long have we been using those? And in this day and age, if somebody doesn't understand that these things need to be simpler, plug and play, order a part online, show up. Now, I get that I'm potentially eating off my own plate here and cannibalizing it. But, you know, remember, entrepreneurs home service entrepreneurs, it isn't our job to make sure that we always make money in home services. It's our job to always make sure that we're making money. Yeah. And if we don't embrace the potentiality of that, then we're going to continue. What we have isn't working. We cannot find enough people to do what we have. And it's the learning curve for hiring someone went from like, hey, make sure he doesn't steal anything and he's got his own tools for 3 days. You know, you hand them like a carbon copy book full of invoices to, yeah, I think he can be out on his own in 12 weeks. So something clearly is going to break. And that's where I see the two paths. I've been increasingly convinced that manufacturers, distributors, and contractors who have kind of sometimes had this adversarial role of like, well, you know, beating each other up to get the best price, which is a big part of it. And there's certainly an appropriateness to some of that. But if we don't start working together better and understanding that we're in the same ecosystem, we're actually in the same boat with a hole. If we argue about whose turn it is to bail out the water, we're missing it.
Do you think manufacturers and distributors are tempted to go around the contractor and direct to consumer? Try to solve the problem.
Couldn't help yourself, could you?
I think they want to do it with contractors. But contractors, I'm going to get hate mail, I think. Sorry, no one knows where I am, right? I think contractors need to lead. I think when industries are changed or when people go first and they lead and they work with contractors and they reach out to contractors and they say, hey, how can we help you solve this problem? And I was part of a futures team that worked on some of this. And it was everything from like, what can, we still send heat strip, air handlers for heat pumps and heat strips separately. And that happens in the field. Little things, there's little innovations that can lead to the right outcomes and build trust along the way for these relationships. But it starts with how we see each other. It's like, if it's the end scene of Reservoir Dogs, we're doing something wrong.
Damn, I've never seen it.
You serious? I know.
You probably saw it on The Office. There was a version of that in The Office.
No, okay. I'm pretty sure he's never seen it. That's not his kind of flick.
too aggressive. So you mentioned labor. Now I'm taking you all over the place. This is a journey of HVAC in home services with Eddie McFarland. What role do you see technology playing into the labor pipeline?
Yeah. Here's the deal. We need to embrace it because the world of waiting 4 years for someone to be revenue positive. It's just too expensive to run these companies anymore. It's just very expensive to market and to find customers and to convert customers and then to keep customers and then to meet customers evolving satisfaction. So anything that we can do with technology to enhance learning, to make learning mobile, to make it sticky, to improve retention, where we can, you know, I don't know if you've talked to the Interplay guys, the VR sort of diagnostic technician. You should, I'll hook you up with those people. It's a really great product. And what it can do is it can shortcut the traditional path, which is somebody coming in who has a vested self-interest in telling you they know as much as possible, because guess what? We're in a negotiation and that's directly related to your offer you're going to make me. So sure, I can run that call. Yeah, sure, I can do that. Yeah, I can work on that. So automatically there's a competing set of interests during the interview stage. And then similarly, today, the technician's often interviewing the company rather than the other way around. So, right. So we get on there and then we have to send them on calls only to find out they don't work on it and come back. And so if there was some sort of machine learning where we can track that, but then also recommend learning modules specifically offset. And then that learning module was underwritten with technology that would share the specific areas that they're getting wrong. So we don't have to do the whole module again. It's just, hey, no, it's your meter doesn't go across it. It goes with it. When we can use technology to leverage to close the knowledge gaps that we have, then we'll start to contract everything. And so Interplay has some tools. They're not quite there yet, but they have a module that you can do, and based on that it will recommend learning modules or a learning path, and tools like that already exist. But I kind of think we need to look in the mirror, because it's sort of like in the last year, right? Everybody said, well, if I had the time, I'd learn French. If I had the time, I'd do this. And we all just stayed home for a year, and all we did was watch crime documentaries and gain 20 pounds, right? So clearly, real talk, it wasn't a function of time. Similarly, Toolshed exists, right? Like, it's free. I've spent 10 years at conferences talking to customers saying, oh, man, I wish I had a trainer that could do that stuff. Stuff's out there. We live in the information age. We don't live in an information shortage. It's an execution shortage. So I think we need to be thoughtful about what we're trying to do, hold ourselves accountable to what we say is important, you know, because we talk a good game. Does our calendar match that? Maybe. And then execute. Measure. Execute. Plan. Measure. Execute. It's not hard, but we got to be real with ourselves too, you know, including me, by the way, still in that glass house.
Mike, drop with the execution shortage. All right. I'm going to close this out with one comment and one last final question. The comment is, and you're going to need to listen to this too, Eddie, go back and listen to the episode after yours airs with Tom Howard from Service Titan. All right. So your comments really align with his, and he's got some really interesting views on technology in the future that you're going to want to hear that will, I assume, have launched by the time our listeners are hearing this. So listeners, go hear it too. And finally, I would be remiss if I didn't give you the opportunity to talk about what's going on with Schedule Engine, what's coming down the pipeline, what's on the roadmap, what keeps you, what makes you excited right now?
Who's your favorite strategic partner?
Right. Yes. Well, first off, the entire Rhino team is who I want to be when I grow up. So that's cool. Austin Haller, the founder of Schedule Engine, has built a team there that's really driving towards solving many of the issues that, you know, contractors are facing. And it's evolving to be a full suite of services, everything from live chat, voice. You know, if you think about the money that we spend on marketing, right? If we put more in the top, we get X out of the bottom. And so every one of those conversion stages in the funnel has a bit of a leak, and Schedule Engine exists to plug those leaks so that you don't need to put more in the top, you just get more out of the bottom. And so you go check them out. They're driving the bus. I just get to show up and tell them how air conditioning will work sometimes. So that's pretty cool. I'd love to encourage everybody to check out. I think one of the things we sort of touched on it is that I think we're going to see a resurgence in organizations again, like ACCA and NAIT, and you know, they've been around for a long time, and they've been doing a lot of great work. But they've been on their own journeys as well, and I'm privileged to serve with a bunch of manufacturers and mostly contractors that are servant leaders, and just doing everything we can to make sure that whether it's legislation that's crippling in Washington isn't passed, or you know, the right tools. Are provided, whether it's, you know, Nate is producing training material that's multilingual. Awesome. We should have tons of that because I can read a census, right? So like all kinds of stuff. It's very cool. Anyway, soapbox. That's cool.
How do you really feel?
Thank you.
Well, we're fans of ACCA since we are the strategic partner, digital marketing company of ACCA. I do say, you know, I'm glad you asked that last question, Paul, because, you know, Schedule Engine is a strategic partnership of ours. I know that we have a very great relationship. The reason it's a great relationship is the volume of success that our customers are seeing from using that tool in the funnel, as you were saying, Eddie. Because if it sucked, we wouldn't be partners anymore, to be quite honest with you. But I love it, man, because it's, you guys are all in on it too. Austin and I have a call tomorrow. And it's just to talk about, you know, how can we do more together, because we believe our customers need you, because at the end of the day, you talked about client satisfaction being number one. That's exactly right. Same thing here. And it's, we just can't do it all ourselves. So we got to utilize technology to also help push it through the funnel. But how do we increase our odds of conversion into a legit customer?
Right.
So that's what it does for us. And with the new live voice offering that's, you know, that's out, like, that also is, been a major problem forever, is this whole after hours answering service debacle. Is it's always kind of been a find the least shittiest after hours answering service.
Yeah, necessary evil, right? Yeah,
and it's like, and it's forever. I mean, at least in my 14 years now in the trades, that's been a constant issue. It's no different than like the tech shortage. So we're happy to be part of that whole deal. And I can't remember how many mutual customers we have. Paul knows better because he manages our partnerships, but it's a lot. And it's a lot because we know it works. So
we'll
love to see what you guys keep coming up with. Hey, can I finish this thing since we kind of started down this road?
Yeah.
Can I finish this with a joke?
I would be disappointed if you didn't.
Why did the technician run towards the air conditioning unit?
I have no idea. Why did the technician run towards the air conditioning unit?
Because he was charging it. No good. Slow clap.
No, that's awesome. I always make this face when I'm laughing.
You know, I'm gonna stick to my day job. Okay. Apparently, my dad jokes. Well, my kids do the same thing. They don't laugh at anything I say.
No, I know. But in all seriousness, I appreciate what you guys are doing. When I look at the way you guys are tackling the innovation and elevation problem in your own way, and you guys do it with such an authentic passion, it's just, honestly, it's, you know, I listened to the Miz podcast this week again, and you know, it's just, you guys are doing it. I know you're, you know, you had your event over there, and you're well staked out to see. To probably make your own very educated guesses about the trends in the industry. And I always enjoy when we get a chance to catch up, because I think it really is the manifestation of the joint philosophy that we have, which is, you know, be good humans, do good work, you know?
Yep. Like, thank you, man. Okay. That means a lot. I appreciate you saying that. And again, thanks for your hour of time with us. I know you could give more than that. I know you have a lot more than that to give. Hey, congratulations with Toolshed. Seriously, like, I like to see it taking off. That's pretty cool.
The production's really good.
It's
too
good.
So
it's solid. Pressure.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I'll wait.
It takes a lot to make this look good.
I'll wait on pins and needles for our Rhino shout out. Seriously, yeah, you got that. Write that down. Mm-hmm. So, hey, again, thank you, man. Appreciate you so much coming on here. I appreciate our friendship, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing your information and all this, and obviously you'll be back on again. So, hasty back.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
That one worked, I think. Haste ye back. That means hurry back.
Yes.
Hurry back.
Yeah.
That's
it,
the
does.
Whole country.
Hasty back.
Hasty back.
That's good, man. It's good.
Hey, listen, Luke. Appreciate it. Yeah, booyah. Okay, hey, listeners, hopefully you appreciate this. Again, you better have appreciated it. If you didn't, don't leave us a review. If you did, feel free to leave a review. We like those, especially when they're five stars. Do we have anything other than a five-star review, Paul or Kyle, do you know?
Only the episode I did by myself.
Oh, yeah. That one had a one star. Sorry. Hey, randomly, too, for you listeners, if one of you happens to be Mark, Mark and Amber, I'm doubting Amber listened, but Mark that ran into Tall Paul in the Cancun airport and recognized him from being a podcast listener, shout out to you. I didn't catch the name of your company, but he recognized Paul, and then so we went over and took a picture with them. So, I know, pretty cool, huh?
My wife was with me. My wife, who's probably never listened to one episode, was like, wow. She went over and grabbed Chris. I felt so naked without Chris. I was like, you got to meet my buddy Chris. So we got a little picture.
We'll share that at some point in time. But listen, Mark, appreciate you making Paul's life at this point. So I'm going to go ahead and share a quick review as we do when we close out the podcast. This is a 5-star review from Ivan Dobish or Dobish, one of the two. Close enough. You know who you are. Says, top notch. I would agree. So I appreciate that we're already on the same page. This podcast is my go-to. They bring in legitimate guests as Eddie McFarlane on here rocking the show, or Eddie Mac, as some call him. Legitimate guests from the home services industry. I love their high energy and positive feel. The knowledge and wisdom is endless. Ivan, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for taking the time to leave us a review. And listeners, again, keep tuning back in. Share the podcast, okay? It's summertime. Y'all going to be in your trucks a hell of a lot more. So, well, you should be. You should be. And you need to listen to stuff just like this. Until next time, until Eddie comes back again, we'll see ya. Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put. So keep doing that. And if you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts. You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review. And be honest and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you. Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.